I'm so happy to introduce our guest speakers this morning. Brady Hardin is an excommunicated Reformed Southern Baptist, and Chuck Parson is a former theology nerd and Christian mystic. Intellectual arguments pushed Chuck to leave his religion, while Brady left because of abuse. Chuck and Brady have been friends, starting when they were both very active Christians. Now, they hold space for those leaving oppressive religion by sharing conversations that are usually kept private about the painful exodus from fundamentalism and how to thrive while rebuilding a new life in the real world. They created their award-winning, locally produced podcast, The Life After, and they're here to talk about it with us today. So please join me in welcoming Chuck and Brady.
I want to thank you all so much for letting us come here. We're not used to being seen.
There's a reason it's audio only on our podcast.
Are you, is that an ugly? You're calling me ugly? No, anyway. I started this podcast and community about a little over a year ago after I went through some really crazy times. I was going to be a pastor. That was what my entire life was dedicated to. It all just went burning to the ground. And I found myself knowing nobody or what was going on. So I decided I wanted to talk about that journey. And I found a couple of people who may know about it. And I picked up, got back in touch with my friend Chuck here. If you want to go to the next slide.
I got you.
Thank you. This was Chuck and I, 2006.
Picture.
Look, that's Chuck, and there's me. That was the weekend that we met at a Christian music festival. And then we just had kind of a friendship, and we didn't see each other for years and years and years.
Yep.
And then we all ended up in the same place, not being part of our old Christian fundamentalism. And here we are.
I just want to point out that the guy on the far left, I don't think we ever saw him again after that day. But for some reason, Brady knows his name, so oops.
MySpace.
So Brady came to me interested in, basically just interested in interviewing me for the podcast because he knew we had somewhat similar story. We're discussing this over dinner at Layla's, I think, and halfway through it, I'm like, oh man, I really want to I'm going to commit to this. And I'm kind of an audio nerd, so I knew Brady would need some help with that. And
big time.
Yeah. So then we record. So we got together, we recorded the first episode, and it was terrible, and we threw it out and re-recorded it. And then that's the first episode that is available now, so we redid it. But the reason I got on board with this was just that I, when I deconstructed my faith, I was Googling, trying to find resources, trying to find good books, recommendations, people that really understood what I was going through, and I found almost nothing. So when Brady made this proposition, I was like, oh man, I have so many things to say about it. I was still pretty angry at the time, I think, so I was like, oh cool, I can rant on, a microphone about it for a little bit.
That's exactly what happened.
But I was, the interesting thing about me and Brady is that Brady was like a very, very, very conservative theologian, and I was a very, very liberal theologian. And we were friends with the commonality of being Christians, but we would constantly debate theology. So my experience of Christianity is a lot less abusive because it's a lot less, kind of conservative and fundamentalist, but there's still so much overlap that we found, and so I think the diversity between the two of us has contributed a lot to the show. Brady?
Yeah, so one of the things that kind of sparked the show was we learned about a term called religious trauma syndrome. We call it RTS, probably throughout this presentation, but religious trauma syndrome is a lot like PTSD or complex PTSD. It's finally being studied, and it's common a lot with people who are coming out of black and white religious suppression. We'll talk about that in a little bit more, but that's kind of what sparked the idea of the podcast, and I think finally we were able to kind of make some resources that would be helpful for people. Chuck, do you mind defining RTS for us?
Yeah. So as you can see there, religious trauma syndrome, the condition experienced by people who are struggling with leaving an authoritarian dogmatic religion and coping with the damage of indoctrination. So a lot of the symptoms are similar to like sort of normal PTSD, depression, anxiety, anger, arousal meaning like sort of like your, when you have PTSD, your lizard brain, your old brain sort of like takes in information.
The kids aren't in here, Chuck. You don't have to lie.
I guess that's true.
We all know what arousal.
We all know what arousal means. So it's basically like your brain telling you that you're in danger when you're not due to trauma triggers. Right. So those are the pretty normal things. So we wanted to include ones that are more specific to religious trauma syndrome. Loss of meaning or purpose. So your entire life is sort of rooted in this idea that God has a purpose for your life, and you can learn, establish a direction that way, and then when you stop believing in God, that goes away. Difficulty belonging in the secular world, or like a fish out of water feeling. A lot of people, especially people that grew up in church, have been so immersed in the culture that they are sort of lost when they find their way out of it. Difficulty experiencing pleasure. A really big thing in Christianity is this sort of like altruism. This like there's a pretty prominent verse in Philippians where Paul says, do nothing out of vain conceit, but in humility consider others more important than yourself. And that's like a really big concept in Christianity. So there's this need for self-denial that you sort of get obsessed with. So then when you free yourself from that and you allow yourself to sort of do what you personally want to do, you have trouble sort of like being comfortable with that.
Which what you want to do is going to involve actual self-denial. You know what I mean? Like, somebody who's naturally compassionate and cares is going to want to deny themselves. So it's not like a uniquely idea that is coming from the religion or anything like that. But when it kind of forces that, you kind of get that idea.
When you're a Christian, you're always looking for ways to deny yourself. Whereas normal people will do it when it's
necessary.
Right. Necessary, right. So sexual difficulty is a really big one. That's kind of like obvious given the mainstream sort of conversation surrounding Christianity right now. A lot of, probably more than half of our listeners are queer in some capacity. I'm not queer, but I still like have had a lot of weird, just like sexual obstacles to overcome.
Oh.
Don't look at me like that, Brady.
I thought you were going to tell a story that I didn't know about.
I wish I had a good story.
I'm gay.
Brady's super gay. thank you.
look at this shirt.
Brady Hart, yeah, no, it's beautiful. I love it. So loss of family, community, that's a really difficult one that I think a lot of people kind of don't see coming when they leave the faith, is that you sort of have faith that the people that you've been around and that have claimed to love you your entire life or for several years will be there for you as you're going through this process, but a lot of times, more often than not, they just sort of like quietly abandon you, or sometimes actively abandon you,
yeah,
in Brady's case.
That happens.
poor sense of self-worth, again, kind of goes back to the experiencing pleasure thing, the altruism. Poor critical thinking skills. That one's really big for people that grew up in church, that that were like indoctrinated from a young age, like myself. I'll get more into this later, but I was homeschooled, I went to a Christian high school, I was immersed in church culture, I went to church multiple times a week. And you're sort of just spoon-fed answers to life's difficult questions instead of being able to like really wrestle with things. So you have to sort of learn to develop those critical thinking skills. Black and white thinking, again, like sort of like strict moralism, especially in more fundamentalist circles, makes it really hard to like understand that there are gray areas, and you can really struggle with that when you're out. So this whole concept was pioneered by Dr. Marlene Wynell. If anybody knows her personally, we'll pay you money to get her on our show. So she's
and
really...
the cool thing about this slide is it also doubles as like my biography. Like,
right.
Each one of these is so big in my story, and I thought it was me that I was just kind of, I'm going to watch myself and not say bad words. I was messed up. I was so messed up. And it wasn't until I started to realize, oh, this is a thing, that when I read that, I'm like, I'm not crazy. Look at that. Right. For this reason. And that was kind of part of my being indoctrinated, which is the next word that we're going to talk about.
Yeah,
and
so I, before we move on, like, so there's sort of like a big part of what we've been learning doing this show is that there's like a process to this that results in religious trauma syndrome. And so we wanted to walk you through like kind of the steps that we think leads to people getting sort of like people getting traumatized because of their religion. Bingo, bango.
Indoctrination. Again, the funny thing about Chuck and I, because we have different experiences, he can talk about indoctrination objectively as like a scholarly way, and I can talk about it. Indoctrination from like the inside out. You know, I was very, very indoctrinated. My family was strict. I grew up in a very Southern Baptist home. My dad was a deacon at our church, ended up cheating on my mom, big, horrible divorce, really bad home life. But like that caused me to run to the religion. And so even as a kid, I was more and more immersed in it because that became my family. And so I was gravitated towards that because I was not getting that sort of community and mentors or anything like that at home. But I was getting where I found the most positive reinforcement. And I was a cute, smart kid who cared about people. And those are the type of people who do well in church and on the Disney Channel. So it's indoctrination is the process of teaching a person or group to accept a set of beliefs critically. We call this blind faith, just this idea that we say that blah, blah, blah is going to happen if you do X, Y, and Z. If you train your child in a way that they will go, they will not leave the ways of the Lord. You know, we had these ideas, these very rigid rules that when we believe them fundamentally as black and white truth, when something didn't work, we had to blame ourselves. Do you know what I'm saying? That's kind of what indoctrination does. So one thing that with my situation, just to give a really quick story, is that I knew that I was gay. I was attracted to men since I was 14. That's when I became like aware of like, hey, there's something's wrong here. Being raised on a Baptist.
Who was it? Who made you know?
Jonathan Taylor Thomas. I'm kidding. Actually,
JTT. That's Randy from Home Improvement, in case anybody is.
But I realized, you know, hey, there's something not right here. And so I was taught as a Southern Baptist that anybody who's gay, they choose to be that way. And here I am like, if that's the truth, then what is wrong with me subconsciously that, you know, I'm doing this? And so we had all these themes of like, well, if you're gay, that's because your dad didn't love you enough or your mom was too controlling, which both of these are true so far. And then another one is like, oh, I didn't have enough guy friends. And so we would always kind of make
good,
up...
Good Christian guy friends.
Good Christian guy friends. This is
it's like a buzz phrase.
And so instead of calling myself gay, I was struggling with same-sex attraction, you know? So we had to reterm things, and we had to kind of fall into these categories that we were comfortable with. And so another time that I experienced that was I knew that acting upon my homosexuality would never be an option for me ever because I was going to get married. I was going to do what God wanted me to do, you know, with my beliefs. I ended up marrying a woman. She knew before our first date that I was attracted to guys because I am transparent to a fault. We got married, and in our marriage, she has some mental health issues, borderline personality disorder, and it got really ugly. And she had an Ashley Madison account and cheated on me over and over and over after our son was born. And so our church got involved, and they were going to fix us. They were going to fix us. And so they did counseling. And they said that she needed to stop seeing her therapist, which was a thing that I had been fighting for as a husband for a long time because I wanted her to get help, you know. And I want to make this a lot faster, I'm sorry. But I fought for that, but they told her to stop seeing her professional Christian therapist because, quote, they wanted to be the only voices she was hearing. And whenever their idea of what counseling was didn't work, then it was because I wasn't loving her enough as a husband. And so they ended up telling, when I took her back four times, and they kept on pushing her to come back. So I had to live through that trauma of finding my ex-wife cheating and talking to this guy, this married guy, over and over and over. At the same time, in between one of those, my best friend just died of sudden heart failure. And so I had to over and over and over. Because it was never an option to them that the way that they were doing counseling, in their minds it was 100% right and it would always work if we did what we needed to do. But because that wasn't happening, it had to have been my fault.
So my story, pretty different, my indoctrination story. I was more or less raised to, I was raised to be an independent thinker with the asterisk that I was an independent thinker as long as I was a Christian. So I rebelled a lot earlier than Brady did. By the time I was in college, I was completely done with fundamentalism. But to give you an idea, I was homeschooled. I was an only child when I was homeschooled. I spent a lot of time just with my mom. I had some neighborhood friends, but I was really lonely. Actually, it took me a long time to realize to recognize the emotion of loneliness because I was so lonely growing up all the time. So I was homeschooled. We used this extremely fundamentalist Christian curriculum called Becca books. Probably nobody has heard of them, but it comes out of a college, Pensacola Christian College, which is really kind of notorious in the Christian world for being like Bob Jones,
wackadoo,
totally crazy,
yeah. Color coded sidewalks.
Right. Yeah. So they have really strict men and women are not allowed to be in the same spaces under a lot of circumstances. They have this kind of unspoken policy where if you make eye contact too long with the opposite sex, it's a bad, it's like a violation of their purity policy or something like that. They call it making eye babies. Yes, it's very, very ridiculous. Now,
that's why sex education is so important.
Yeah, right. You cannot make babies with your eyes. The life after does not hold that view. Yes. No, we don't hold that view.
No.
So,
but that's why we are a podcast. I don't want any illegitimate
children. Right. Yeah.
audio only.
I should qualify that and say my parents are not that conservative, but this is a really common thing where reasonable parents will get involved in homeschool circles with right-wing crazy people, and then they'll sort of get inadvertently sucked into the culture. And then what happens is their kids wind up more conservative than them, which is it's a really common problem. And then you sort of so that happened a lot with our generation in particular. There was our generation was this really big youth group generation. We had this youth group boom, and there was this church youth culture explosion. And a lot of it was because of these Dr. James Dobson fronted efforts to educate youth on Christian morality, right? So I was kind of the result of that. Very shame to say, in high school I served on the George W. Bush campaign trail in 2004. I'm so sorry, everybody. I didn't mean it. I didn't know, but by the time I was in college, I sort of left that whole thing and started thinking for myself and redefining. But it would be a long time before I left Christianity. So I'm going to talk a little bit about indoctrination. I really like Richard Dawkins is a little bit militant for my taste, but I like this analogy that he uses. He compares indoctrination to a virus. And I really like that because viruses you don't spread a virus on purpose. It usually
That outbreak monkey.
The what?
Do you remember that movie Outbreak? That monkey, I think he knew what he was doing. When he bit that guy.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, I just thought of that.
The outbreak monkey. I was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
There's an exception. There's an exception.
We do a lot of, I don't know what you're talking about, Brady, on the show.
That's my middle name.
That's right. So you don't choose to catch a virus. You don't choose to transmit a virus. You usually get it because either one person around you or several people around you have it. You catch on to it. Viruses aren't really created very often. They don't really It's rare that a new virus comes about, but they do evolve over time to sort of survive, right? We're seeing like a really extreme example of that in evangelicalism right now, where Christians are like adapting to Trump culture in order to, because the ultimate goal is outlawing abortion, so they're making all these compromises. So the whole system has to evolve, right? The whole indoctrination has to like rethink the way that it's rhetoric and everything, right? So,
but we got the antivirus.
We got the antivirus. We're the ones. We're Will Smith in I Am Legend. Another analogy that I like to use is like pillars, or like I think we came up with Jenga yesterday, which probably works even better. The entirety of Christian theology, at least in the fundamentalist sense, is sort of like built on a few pillars, or in this case, like a small stack of three, we'll say three beliefs on the bottom, and then you sort of stack three beliefs on that, and three beliefs on that. And the issue with indoctrination is that if you pull the wrong one out, the whole structure tumbles, right? Whereas like normal critical thinking is sort of like a much broader knowledge base, right? So if you take one part out, you might lose a wing, but it doesn't really matter because the entirety of the worldview is standing in place, right? So that's sort of where a lot of people like get hung up in indoctrination, is that it's very taboo in Christian culture to prod at those bottom Jenga pieces, or those little pillars, like that God created the world, God is good, Jesus is God.
You can trust the Bible 100%, or things like that.
Right. The Bible is inerrant, or you can trust it 100%, things like that. So it's really taboo to poke around at those, and usually just sort of get handed a book by Lee Strobel or something.
I had a Facebook argument recently, and somebody's response was, I had a question, and all they could respond was, Lee Strobel's Ravi Zacharias. But if you don't know who they are, they're two people that are
Christian apologists.
And it's kind of like they're the go-to that people go to if they ever do get kind of like a question about the historical accuracy and anything like that. They have two people to think about.
Most people that are not, without conclusion bias, their answers are very unsatisfactory, right? Speaking of Christian apologists,
can I talk about this slide?
Yeah, do it. Okay. Do it.
This is one of my favorite slides. I remember this when I was a kid. This is from Answers in Genesis. If you guys are familiar with them, and Ken Ham, that's the guy who built the giant Noah's Ark in Kentucky.
Also runs the Creation Museum. Recently debated Bill Nye.
And he's the one who says that you have to take the Bible, like the 6-day creation story, as a literal, because if you don't take it as a literal 6 days, then Jesus wouldn't matter. And it goes into this whole thing where it just, but this is what we're talking about, is if you don't take it completely literal, as some people would say, then there is no protection for some of their beliefs to take other things literal. So it kind of becomes like a domino effect, or as we said, a Jenga falling over. But what they do is, this is like a updated version of the...
We could have used this for my analogy, which is what cracks me up about it.
He falls into that so many times. He said, like, if you don't believe that there's a 6-day, then that will make you an atheist or something.
Right.
And people are like, yes, that's actually what happens. But that happens to a lot of people, not everyone. Right. But the thing is that this is the Tower of Christianity, and here's, I guess, the rest of us, okay? We called those the Gentiles whenever I was younger. So here, actually, to make this even funner, they have labeled this flag humanism. All right?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So this is all you people, all right? You nasty ethical societies right here. But you're shooting your cannonballs, which do not explode, by the way, all right? At here, which is creation thousands of years, because it's really important to them that the world is only 6,000 years old, and this is God's word is truth. And they said if us non-Christians were trying to get rid of Christianity, or trying to get rid of creationism, so that we can get away with
racism,
pornography, family breakups, gay marriage.
That's rough.
Look out!
We're really terrible people.
Let me tell you something. If any gay marriage was as bad as my straight marriage, abortion, removal of the Ten Commandments, yeah, because maybe we need a couple more. Maybe do not hurt people, sexually assault people, might be
and
racism. But the idea is that they think that we're trying to get rid of creationism as a scientific idea so that we can get away with sins. But the funny thing is, like, that means these are the Christians. This guy's shooting a cannonball over here. He doesn't know what's going on at all. And then there's no strategy. He's shooting his own thing.
Yeah, because he believes in old earth creationism. So he's totally ruining the whole. Anyway, the point is, I love it. I just love that Ken Ham did this for me. Yeah, that's really satisfying to me. So I really just severely dislike Ken Ham. So anyway, the next let's move right along there. It's hilarious. Let's look at it again. Okay. So how do churches indoctrinate people? This is really important. It's a little bit different if you grow up in church versus if you join church later, but there's a lot of overlap. So claim of exclusivity on truth. Claim there are only certain sources for truth, so the Bible, your pastor, mostly those are the kind of the two, like your clergymen, your elders, whatever. And if you establish truth, the big thing is if you establish truth by your own means and your own reason, it has to be tested against biblical truth or against your church's beliefs or whatever, and if it doesn't match up, then you have to sort of throw it away, right? Pastor, leader, clergyman having special knowledge is really big in charismatic circles, where they'll have like a prophet in the church or several prophets that will like prophesy and give the church like special knowledge that they claim is directly from God.
Which I thought I had to give to prophecy for a while, but that's a whole other story.
Right.
That's a story for my therapist.
Christian education, that's a big one for me. I mean, you should see the insane bias in the books that I was reading when I was growing up. It's crazy.
When I was younger, I heard a sermon where it was somebody in the South, and he was saying that we did a favor in America by having slavery, because it was by that people were able to hear about God. If this was my mic, I would drop it.
Who was it? Yeah, I can't really answer. So limiting access to knowledge. That's a little bit harder for adults, but they tend to encourage people not to. Like, that's more of a cultural thing, right, where it's like, oh, you don't read... You don't waste your time reading science books. You don't waste your time reading self-help books, psychology, those kinds of things. You read Christian books, and you read the Bible, and you read Christians' interpretation of the Bible. So that's kind of how it works with adults. With kids, it's easy. You just don't give them anything secular, right? Indoctrinate people. That's a big thing for Brady. Most people that participate in this sort of indoctrination don't mean any harm. They're just reciprocating.
Aunt Lydia, for anybody who watches Handmaid's Tale.
And then
that was gonna be me.
Systematically instilling fear, hell, immorality, fear of the outside world. We'll get a little bit more into that in the next section, but let's skip that because we gotta do time things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fine. This is my favorite part, but it's okay.
So, oh, was it? Let's
no,
go back.
No,
I'll tell a really brief version of it. So, we had a guest on the show. So we had a guest on the show that was struggling with his beliefs in, I think, high school. He went to his pastor. He said, I'm wrestling with X, Y, and Z. The pastor gave him some books. Again, probably Lee Strobel,
Rabbi Zechariah,
Ken Ham, probably Rabbi Zechariah.
Yeah.
And he read them, and he came back and said, these aren't really satisfactory answers for me. So the pastor's response was, oh, then there must be sin in your life. which is a very manipulative term in Christianity, right? So effectively, like, you can see how indoctrination works, right? If you use your own reason and you trust your own reason, then you're doing something wrong. You are sinning. You are bad, right? Like, you're struggling with your faith because you're sinning and you're not seeing God properly, right? So anyway, all that to say, that is an example of the next sort of step in religious trauma syndrome, which is going to be spiritual abuse.
This is abuse administered under the guise of religion, including harassment or humiliation, which may result in psychological trauma. Religious abuse may also include misuse of religion for selfish, secular, ideological ends, such as abuse of their position. As I talked about before with the situation with the church, the last church that I was disfellowshipped from, well, the only church I was disfellowshipped, the last church that I went to, they did not have it as an option at their counseling. They would never allow themselves to think that their counseling may be lacking. Okay, and so because of that, it came down to my fault. So after the fourth time that I tried to take her back, and it was clear that because of the mental health issues and what was going on in marriage, that I couldn't fix it anymore. She filed for divorce, and then 2 days later, when they found out that she was going to file for divorce, the church told me that I needed to beg her to stay and ask for forgiveness of anything I ever could have done to make her want to have an affair. Nothing in general, nothing specific, just in general, you know. And I said, no, I'd taken it back 4 times. This is abusive. Thank God I finally had somebody who helped define what spiritual abuse was for me. Because once I had that as an understanding, as a term that I understood, then I was able to go back and say, no, this is done. I've done everything that I can, and I need to make peace with this. Because at that point, my faith was going away. Because I was taught that our type of Christianity would make people loving in a supernatural way that never could be found in the world, because if God is love, then only the people with love can actually really love people. That's what I believed. And then I realized if that's what this is, then it's kind of bullshit. And that's when things kind of started to really unravel for me. So I had to have a category in my mind that it was not my fault. And so especially trying to realize that I was gay, all of that, to go for it. So when the church told me to try to make her to say ask for forgiveness, I said no. 2 days later, unknown to me, in front of my church, they announced that I was being disfellowshipped. Because I was not working to save my marriage.
This was on a Sunday morning.
In front of 250 people, yeah. Some that I've never even met before. And this was right at the time that my wife was leaving me. My best friend just died. My ex-wife just outed me to my mom. My mom was trying to work on a new schedule where I would not have my son overnights because I'm gay. And quote, if I don't molest or rape him, one of my friends would. So I'm having to hit just trauma after trauma after trauma, and a lot of it is because I'm stuck inside of this indoctrination and this cycle of spiritual abuse where people aren't, in their minds, caring about empathy or the effects of what I'm going through. They care about following their system dogmatically because they believe that's going to be the magic potion that's going to Harry Potter ending of the movie and just, you know, everything has the, what do you call it, deus ex machina?
Yeah.
Latin!
Machina, but yeah.
Machina.
So I also want to point out that church didn't stop at announcing to their own congregation that Brady was no longer a part of the church. They actually called several different churches that Brady was like attempting to go to and told them that he was like not a good person.
Rebellious.
Yeah, he was rebellious. That was the word that they used.
Look out, folks.
Indoctrination.
This single dad's going to come and get you.
Boy, were they right. So Brady and I have both served in ministry, and we can tell you from experience. Unfortunately, like, this is kind of a difficult part of this whole process for us, is that we both participated in a lot of these systems
yes.
several times. And it's funny, but it's also terrible when you think about it sometimes.
Horrible.
Yeah. So we've seen these things happen. The ugliest things that happen in churches don't happen on Sunday morning from the pulpit. Like, that's, some ugly things happen there, right. But the worst things that happen are in church counseling sessions when you meet with your pastor, in pastoral board meetings, like, really crazy things happen, deacon meetings, these, like, behind closed doors things where what often happens is people are struggling, and the pastor, who's, you know, who's in, A, indoctrinated, B, his livelihood depends on the well-being of the church, a lot of times will make decisions that benefit the institution at the expense of an individual. In Brady's case, totally, definitely the case. I mean, if you were a church leader and something was going wrong with your marriage, it's a big thing to keep it hush-hush. It's a big thing to resolve everything as quickly as possible. Make sure that everything looks perfect from the outside. It doesn't matter if your marriage isn't working. You make it work, right? So, yeah, that's the game. So I have a story from my own life that I was part of a church. A woman was, her fiancé sexually pursued somebody else in the congregation. She was deeply, deeply, deeply hurt by this. Nothing actually happened, but it was one of those things where, you know, it was a betrayal for sure. The church's response to it was, the first thing that they wanted to do was get everybody together and try and reconcile the situation. So her fiance was a church leader. She was like a prominent member of the church. As a couple, they were sort of like looked up to by a lot of the young people in the church. So the mentality was, let's resolve this as quickly as possible. We can't have dissonance in the culture, right? So she was sort of like forced to like try and forgive the both parties in the situation. She was forced to try and to like continue to coexist with this woman that she had all this animosity towards because she was so deeply hurt by the situation. The marriage was sort of like, it was encouraged to continue to happen instead of like taking a step back and saying, are you ready to get married? Is this a good idea? Are you going to be able to get over this? Is it, you know? And it didn't end well, quite frankly. The woman was very deeply hurt about this for years because that this first few weeks is an important part of the healing process, and she was not able to heal. It was a messy situation, so that's sort of like something that I was in on, unfortunately, and something that reconciliation is so highly valued in that culture that it was like
forgive and forget.
It was automatic. It was like, of course, this is the right course of action. These people have to reconcile if what we believe is true. Again, don't pull out pieces of the Jenga tower, right?
Another thing that we did a lot of was redefining terms within our community. One of the big ones that comes to my mind is kind of talking about respect and fear and reverence. When I say respect to my son now, I don't mean like in a scary way, reverence, but that's what we viewed it as. And so we kind of had to like bend some terms around to kind of fit into what we were doing as a community. Another one, mental health. We always look down upon mental health. Oh, the psychologists, the you know, counselors, or the secular, whatever. The Bible has all the answers was the kind of fundamentalism that I came from. So when it came to getting diagnosed or to kind of get a little bit of a breathing space to learn about that, we didn't have that opportunity. Really quick, there was a friend of mine that I grew up with when she was in youth group that every day, she's on the podcast, I think it's episode 11, it's called Enough with Ashley Adams. And my friend Ashley, growing up in youth group, everything, she had these really bad panic attacks and social anxiety and just really bad things were going on at home and perpetuated, but nobody was educated enough to know, hey, I want to pull you aside and say, hey, let's go look at some options for therapy or something. But we were with her all the time, and these other adults were with her all the time. And she had to like excuse herself from church to have these anxiety attacks and then come back with people. And so these patterns should be seen, But she didn't want, she couldn't go get help because the answer would have been, and has been historically in those situations, well, hey, here's some more things that you need to do. Here's some more books you need to read. Why don't you start doing more mission trips? Why don't you? And then there's all this other stress that's being added where you're having to keep yourself composed and look like a spiritual person, but in really you're just screaming internally because there's so much undiagnosed mental illness. Love is another one in my Calvinistic background. Love was kind of more defined as telling people things that they don't want to hear, but you know that they need to hear, you know? And so love became kind of like a, well, if you really love me, then you're going to be a jerk. And so we would say things like, oh, yeah, let me encourage you to. And so encourage became a very manipulative word. You know, another very manipulative word is bitterness. That if you show resentment and not immediate forgiveness, then you just seem to be really angry and very bitter. Because we know that bitterness in the Bible is talked about in a negative way, and so now they define anything that we have as a negative thing, emotion towards somebody as bitterness. That's a manipulative tactic that I've seen from several people in my life under unrelated ways. Self-respect was looked down upon. Self-improvement was looked down upon, and same with counseling and anything.
Counseling is just, the big thing there is that it doesn't mean like professional, like somebody that actually knows what they're talking about. It means somebody that's like well-versed in the Bible or somebody that's considered wise by the church community, right? Real quick, another really prominent and probably culturally more evident source of spiritual abuse is the culture of fear and shame, right? So we see this a lot with sexuality, gender, certain ambitions and motivations are considered sort of shameful or like outside of what's desirable. If you're motivated by money or if you're motivated by wanting to get ahead, if you're motivated by intellect, if you're motivated by, the idea of being really good at anything in particular, that's considered a bad motivation. Your motivation is supposed to be to glorify God, so that's a big part of that. We need to... What?
Keep going down.
Oh, sure. Let's go to this part. Yeah. So we have a lot of examples of people that, I mean, this is sort of where our show starts to kick in, is our show is about people that went through this and stuck with it regardless. A big part of the reason that they do that is twofold. One is your entire social world is your church, right? So it's really difficult to make a decision that would, hurt people around you by announcing that you've lost your faith, but also the risk, like the risk of losing those people is really high when you're talking about leaving the faith. The other reason is a little bit more complicated, and that's sort of our next point.
Religious gaslighting is manipulation of somebody by psychological and spiritual means into questioning their own sanity, believing blind faith over what is actually present and knowable. Like I said before, you have to be, it's either your fault, and that's it, because we believe that everything was black and white and it was completely correct. And what I needed, and what I'm hoping that this podcast is on the next slide, and that is, I needed somebody to open a door for me that I didn't know was there. It's kind of like Clue, you know, where somebody's going through and they pull the right book and that door opens. And if you didn't know that door was there, then it's kind of a relief, because now you can find more clues and figure out who did the murder, where, and with what. So that was kind of what it was for me, was to finally have an opportunity to step out of the cycle of indoctrination and out of the spiritual abuse that I had, and to start over after religious trauma. And I'm kind of hoping that becomes, that's what our podcast is for a lot of people, is that ability to just have permission, to give yourself permission to say, hey, I'm actually going to sit down with my doubts and I'm really going to talk about this. And if I do stop believing, it doesn't mean I need to go off into the sunset and be quiet, but I can actually be a person again and redefine what that means for me.
So the ways that religious gaslighting sort of perpetuates itself is it's most effective when it exploits the effects of indoctrination, right? So there's this belief that whatever problems you're experiencing will be resolved or fixed by the system, by the church, by God, by the Bible. So when you start to when you start to think, hey, this behavior is abusive, I'm being hurt by this, or this system is hurting me, the job, the role of the church is to say, well, that's your own reasoning that you're trusting. You need to go back to the text. You need to go back to the teaching. Effectively saying, like, your rational thoughts are invalid. Basically saying that you're crazy for trusting your own intuition, right? So that's why people stay in the system. And this is where me and Brady really come in, is the process of deconstruction.
Two more slides, we're done.
Right,
promise.
We're almost done.
Deconstruction of our faith, that's the process where you're kind of taking through your belief systems and figuring out where exactly in this tube of sausage your beliefs stop, and you get rid of everything else. Do you know what I mean? Of what kind of cuts?
Some people call it deconversion. We prefer deconstruction because it's way more of a process of unlearning than it is like a choice to be something else, right?
And it's not destruction. We don't expect everyone to leave the faith completely.
Sometimes
we don't want that. That's not our goal. But our goal is for people to find what they're comfortable with and where they're able to be themselves and not have to compromise who their internal ethics are and their internal morality, is that they're able to be true to who they are and not be ashamed of things that are being shamed by the Christian fundamentalism that we came out of. I can be gay now. I'm a gay single dad, and I'm able to be happy about that and have contentment in that, in a way that I never in my entire life thought was going to be a possibility and would keep me up at night and make me have to put myself to therapy and hopefully fix myself, which I tried several times. And so now I'm able to step back and say, let me actually look at morality, what actually affects other people, and then this is kind of part of my deconstruction and pulling all of that.
So what we've been really looking into with our show is, what are the effects of deconstruction? How does that hurt people? Feeling stupid or duped is a very, very common thing. You get out of it, once you stop believing it, you're like, how did I ever believe this?
An adult
it's
male
very common.
In
There's no
Noah's
reason. Ark. Right, right, yeah, exactly, yeah. Who believed in Noah's Ark? You feel very let down by your community, often by your parents, by your family. You're behind in directionless. That was a big one for Brady when he came out, and he was so, like, even his college experience for Brady was Christian. Leaves the faith, his entire life was built around the idea of becoming a pastor, and now gets out in the world, has no practical skills because you've devoted all of your intellect and all of your time to studying theology. This is a really common thing for people that were deeply involved in church. Out of touch with your own body, sexuality, ability to reason. Episode 4, Jamie on our show talks a lot about reacquainting yourself with your body. Your body is bad when you're a Christian. It's the flesh, right? So the desires of your body are a bad thing. So you struggle with that a lot. It's a painful but really awesome, beautiful process to reunite with your body, right? Trouble processing emotions. Emotions are deceptive. We're taught not to process them. We're taught to give them to God, whatever that means. Which really, if there is no God, is just repressing them, right? So you have to learn to unrepress, and then you have to learn how to process emotions. Loss of community and feeling like an outsider kind of goes back to out of touch. But for a lot of people, you lose everybody that you know and love. Especially in fundamentalist circles where you are shunned, you're effectively either passively or actively shunned by your community. So you have to start from scratch. You have to decide to make friends with people from work, which you probably didn't do before because your community was your church, things like that. And a shattered worldview. You have to rebuild your worldview from the ground up. You have literally nothing. For me, I'll get into that on the next slide. So that leads us into our last point, which is reconstruction. This is the hopeful part of this whole thing. We've seen this. It's possible. You can do it. For me, the first step was, I had no basis for my worldview. The first thing that I decided was, I'm going to do things that are, before I even was comfortable using the word empathy, I'm going to do what's happy and healthy for me and what's happy and healthy for the people around me. And sometimes those things contradict each other and you have to wrestle with that conundrum, but I no longer had a book to tell me what to believe, so that was where I started, and I started building from there. rebuilding community. That's why we started the podcast, was so that there would be a voice for these people, so that there would be a conversation, so that we could find other like-minded people.
When enough people say
similar things,
when enough people say, "I thought I was the only one going through this,"
yeah,
there's a point where it's like, "I need to get the people who keep saying that in touch."
We probably hear people say that once a week, twice a week, different people that we've never met. Go to therapy.
Professional license.
Learn how to feel. Yeah, professional license therapy.
Don't go to your church.
We have a whole episode about it. Don't go to your church therapist. Learn how to feel again. Learn how to be in touch with your own emotions. Learn how to talk things out without having to involve God, who's extremely unpredictable and probably doesn't exist. Regaining sense of self and autonomy. Again, that's reuniting with your body. That's being able to make your own decisions. And then disappointing parents, again, because we all disappointed our parents, and then I disappointed them again. That was just kind of a joke we threw in. But.
Thank you all so much for listening to us today.
Right, so anywhere that you stream podcasts, our podcast is available. It's called The Life After. We have a Patreon if you want to donate to the cause. We are on Spotify, which not every podcast is. And also for our community, so we have a secret Facebook community where your identity is not known to anybody outside of the group. It's a safe space to talk about your faith. There's zero argumentation.
It's
supportive. There's very, very, very little.
Don't use absolutes, Chuck.
And if there is, it's highly regulated. And also, we have a Slack if you're anti-Facebook, because increasingly people are pretty anti-Facebook. So. Yeah, and probably should be. So.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Jeff, thank you. By the way, thank you, Jeff, for suggesting this whole thing, putting the whole thing together. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you guys for coming. That's a great show. I was wondering, what can you explain real quickly? What's your reach? Who are you reaching? How broad is it? Where are they?
What age?
We're shooting for. Honestly, just I feel like representation shows what we're going for. You know, so our reach are people who kind of look like us. I'm gay, so we've got a lot of queer people. He's multiracial, and that's an important thing to us because it's always white men speaking on a lot of podcasts, which I'm guilty of. So we do that, but also on our show, I've brought a woman in who's old enough to be my mom because I absolutely love her, and she was abused by the same church as
we have. I mean, on our Facebook group, we have, I would say mostly like 25 to 35 probably, but we have people that are 40, 50, 60 that participate. We don't know much about our reach as far as age because that's not a statistic that's easy to get. But we are, right now we're at about 6,000 downloads a month. And it's all over the world, literally. So Australia, Europe, parts of, I think even like Africa.
Canada. Oh, yeah. Africa.
Canada, yeah. Most of our listeners are in the United States, Canada, and UK.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks.